The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio. In the early days of the invasion, people took to the streets across Russia to protest. But within weeks, most of the visible signs of dissent had disappeared. To understand why, first we have to look at the language the Kremlin is using to shape public opinion. When officials and the media talk about Russia's actions in Ukraine, they don't use words such as war and invasion. The flip side is, people can be legally liable for talking about peace in public or promoting anti-war slogans. Like this detention in the center of Moscow in mid-March. A young man stood with a sheet of paper which, at first glance, didn't even look like an anti-war poster. It just showed 8 asterisks.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be with you today. Thank you for joining me, and thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. Today in Russia, holding the book War and Peace, or a piece of paper with printed asterisks, can get people detained. Can you believe that? It's pretty amazing. You just heard audio. Wall Street Journal was looking at how the Kremlin is going to restrict free speech and control in the whole narrative about the war in Ukraine. Aren't you glad you're an American? I know our country can be a little crazy. I know our leadership right now can be a little crazy, right? Some of the policies that are at play can be a little wacky. But I'll tell you what, I would not trade the United States of America for any country, you know, any nation. And I've been to almost 50 countries around the world, stepped on a lot of foreign soil. This is the greatest nation in the world. And you see what's happening here. I mean, as a journalist, if you report news that Russia doesn't like, you can be detained. It could be a decade of your life, a decade and a half of your life. There's a lot going on. We got a lot to get into today, and I'm looking forward to talking to you. Continue to pray for world peace. That's the message Our Lady gave to us, especially in Fatima, right? She said, pray for peace. And she talked about what loomed in the future. Our day's not any different. I mean, I think more than ever, we're really approaching a crossroad. I think we should be amping up the prayer, not in retrospect saying, my gosh, I wish we would have prayed to avoid this conflict or this problem. Do your part now. Today's Friday. It's a day of penance. It's a day which we should fast. We should make some sort of sacrifice. If you can't sacrifice, you can't do an act of penance. How about just praying? And let's pray for peace to reign throughout the world. The war in Ukraine, it's having international reverberations. I mean, Finland and Sweden, right? This is a big, big story. But I really want to dive into it in greater detail in the future. Just to give you a little history. Finland and Sweden both applied to join NATO. But Turkey seems to be going to bat for Russia, right? It's its largest trading partner. Turkey, like all the other members of NATO, has veto power. The acceptance of any other country into the alliance. And here's the thing you may not know. You're thinking, oh, wow, everybody wants, you know, Sweden and Finland to come in, right? Yeah, but if there's one country that says no, they're not allowed in. So the acceptance of any country into NATO, into the alliance, it has to be unanimous. It has to be unanimous. Now, the president gave a speech the other day talking about how, oh, he's sure, you know, that, you know, this won't be a problem, you know, and again, NATO is a defensive organization, right? And Vladimir Putin is concerned that they're on his border now. But when Sweden and Finland made their applications, Turkey said they would not support them. Why? Well, Turkey's saying they allegedly had support of the PKK party, which is a Kurdish party trying to win a homeland in Turkey, but also because they're supposedly harboring followers of a man who successfully tried a coup attempt in Turkey a few years ago. So that's their justification for the no. I wonder how much of it is, or how much of it is their relationship right now with Russia. The U.S. has given its full support. And they said, you know, you've got the green light to these two Nordic countries. And it's a big move. I mean, take a look at Sweden and Finland. Take a look at their position over the past several hundred years, really. Take a look at the position of neutrality. So for them to see the writing on the wall, to see what happened in the country of Ukraine, knowing that they border Russia and they possibly could be next, and they know that instead of neutrality, their best defense is probably being part of the alliance. It takes a lot. I think it takes a lot for them to pull that trigger. We'll see whether or not they get in. U.S. is on board. UK has entered into a security agreement with the two of those. So it's a developing story. But here's the latest. And the reason I'm bringing this up, I am quite fascinated about how this is going to play out. This action, their decision to join NATO, it's going to cost Finland, though. Starting tomorrow, I don't know if you heard this report, Russia is going to cut off its gas supply to Finland. Starting tomorrow, they're going to cut off the gas flow to Finland because Finland refused to pay its bill to Gazprom in rubles, as Russia demanded. You know, Russia wants all payments now in its currency. Poland and Bulgaria have also been cut off from the supply. And right now, the war certainly is not going the way that Russia wanted to go. And I was saying this to a colleague of mine the other day. I just said, you know, if Vladimir Putin could turn back the hands of time, if he could see what was about to unfold, would he rolled in an attempt to take Kiev? He's lost a third of his army, right? Lost a third of them. We have seen not only him and his oligarch friends, but his girlfriends, his family members. We've seen the sanctions that have been put on them. You know, we've seen the alliance, NATO, getting stronger as a result of his actions. And we've seen what has happened to him on the international scene. I think, you know, he thought it would be like Crimea. He thought it would be a pretty easy play. Did not go down that way. And this is an important story. That's why I again call you to prayer, because China right now is seeing how, you know, the West is responding. They're seeing how this is playing out. They're learning. They're observing from Vladimir Putin what worked, what did not work. Will they go in and take over Taiwan? And what will the global response to that be? Sanctions, trade, military support, financial aid, U.S. giving $40 billion to Ukraine. And some people said that should have been a loan. That might have been a good way to go. You know, we've been supplying right now Ukraine with all kinds of weapons and training, and Congress just passed that $40 billion spending bill in support of Ukraine. I'll tell you, as a nation, boy, we spend a lot of money, don't we? We are printing money like crazy, and I know the country's feeling it as well. But I heard one person say, if you think it's expensive, the $40 billion, it would be a lot more expensive if we did not support this effort. Ukraine has to win. They have to beat Russia in this. It's a lot of money. You know, it was held up for a while. Senator Rand Paul, kind of an isolationist. He wanted some kind of accountability for the money that was being sent over there. But right now, the popular sentiment is that, you know, it's in favor of Ukraine, and Congress considered it to be a worthwhile bill. So we'll see how all this plays out. Part of the problem, though, one final thought on this. With all of the support for Ukraine, for all of this support for Ukraine, part of the problem is we are cutting into our own defense supplies. And we are cutting into our own defense supplies. I mean, you know, we may have Stinger Javelin missiles, and sending them to Ukraine means that we now need to start resupplying our own stock. That's going to take a while. So, look, I get it. I'm glad I'm not in government. I'm glad I'm not the one who's got to make a lot of these decisions. But I want America first. You know, that's kind of my attitude here. It's like being on an airplane, right? You know, you lose your oxygen supply. What do? You have to put your mask on first before you help the person next to you, right? And that's how I think we have to be. We need to make sure that our T's are crossed, our I's are dotted, and then help those. And look, we're the most generous nation in the world, bar none. Bar none. Can't tell you how many great groups are out there doing relief for Ukraine. U.S. is helping militarily. Poland's doing an incredible job taking in so many of these people who have had their businesses, their homes, their lives absolutely annihilated, wiped off the face of the map. And now they've got to rebuild. I had the head of Goya Foods on the program. It was last month. Bill Unanway, I think his name is, if I remember, Unanway, I think. I can't remember off the top of my head here. Forget. Bottom line is Unanway, right, Maggie? Is it Unanway? Am I getting that right? Unanway. Great guy. Doing incredible incredible work, you know, helping to feed the people over. There's a lot of organizations, a lot of Catholic groups that are over there. There's another one I've got to get you up to speed on. It's called Cross Catholic Outreach. I'll give you their website, too. It's crosscatholic.org. I had the opportunity to travel with that group years ago. I went to Haiti, which is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, a nation that has suffered unimaginably through natural calamity and just abject poverty, really. I mean, honestly, I saw people living, you know, in absolute squalor. I see mothers willing to hand their child to you just so it can have a better life and so it won't die from malnutrition. It's pretty amazing. So when I see what's happening around the world, you know, the war is hell, as General Sherman once said. The people of Ukraine are experiencing it right now. I mean, these people didn't expect Russia to roll in. I mentioned this the other day. I mean, they were sitting at open-air restaurants the day before Vladimir Putin rolled in. He told the world he was not going to do that, right? And all of a sudden, their cities, their towns have been leveled. Cities and towns, which, you know, was once just an incredibly beautiful country, have been turned into rubble. They've been turned into rubble. Mass graves, you know, all over the place. It's just sheer destruction. Millions of civilians, they had to flee. Most, as I said, have gone to Poland, Central Europe, Bulgaria. But along with their cities being leveled, and here's something that's going to play out, I think, in the months and the year ahead. Ukraine was known as the breadbasket of Europe. And they're a major, major supplier of food for the entire continent. But with so many people gone and with soldiers all over the country and air battles taking place as well, it's going to be hard for farmers to plant crops as they normally do. And that's actually one of the reasons why there is a global food shortage predicted for this year, a global food shortage. So with so many people displaced from their homes, with their economy now in tatters, with their farmlands being threatened, with Ukrainian people just in serious need. I can't even imagine the psychological trauma, the PTSD that they're going to have after this. There are people who are stepping up to help them in this time of need. And I'd like to highlight those. As I said, we had the President Goya on. I've invited Jim Kavanaugh to come by. And the reason I bring these individuals to you is because you're sitting here in America and we are a blessed nation. You may be very, very blessed. And you might think, well, what can I do? It's so far away, right? But what can I possibly do? You can help. I mean, there are care packages. There are ways that you can reach out and help people that have far less than you and I. Jim Kavanaugh joins me today. And again, find him at Cross Catholic Outreach. And that website is crosscatholic.org. Jim, thanks for all you do around the world, literally, to help people. I know we've traveled together in Haiti. I hear you're now in Ukraine. And I'd love to find out what your efforts are all about. Why don't you bring us up to speed on what's happening? I don't know whether you've been to Ukraine or just to Poland, or what are you seeing and what's happening?
It's good to be with you there, here, Drew. And I have not personally been to Ukraine, but as you know, all of our ministry around the world, and we do hundreds of millions of dollars worth of aid every year to hundreds of projects in last year, 32 countries. But when disasters happen, in particularly in a place like Ukraine, where we don't ordinarily, you know, have churches and pastors and dioceses that we're working with, you might wonder, well, then how do we operate? I like to say we're not first responders. We don't send a team of people over there. I call us the first suppliers of the first responders. So right now we're working as we usually do through the church, through people who are directly in the church and involved in Ukraine. One of them, believe it or not, is a cardinal in the Vatican. His name is Cardinal Konrad Krajewski. Wow. He's has the title currently of papal almoner. You might remember that when Pope Francis became Pope, he sent this man out, this cardinal, out into the streets around the Vatican to take care and try to do something for the homeless who are sleeping out there. They set up showers. They did a lot of different things. Well, now he's been recently appointed to be the head of the Office of Papal Charity. And we happen to have a relationship with him. A few of our priests happened to be over there couple of weeks ago, last month, and spent some time with him, and we've been supplying him. He's actually gone into Ukraine. He took two ambulances in that he drove into Ukraine, not alone, but with others, and took to Kyiv, one of them, another one, which is sort of in the middle of the country, in the capital. The other one went to a place called Lviv, which is more toward the western side near the Polish border. And so we've been in touch with him by text and telephone, and he keeps us updated on what the needs are. We're supplying cash directly to him. He's purchasing food, clothing, generators, ambulances, medicines, and going directly to the bishops in these various parts of Ukraine and in Poland, in the areas where all the refugees are, and distributing the aid. And he sends us text messages and photographs, so we know what's going on. And that's just one of the partners we're working with.
Let me jump in on that point, because I think it's a really important point. So often, you know, when people send aid to nations in need, the Sudan, wherever it might be, right? So often it gets intercepted or doesn't meet its destination. I love this channel of distribution. So you're literally getting it into the hands of bishops, who then can get it into the hands of their parishes and the people most in need then.
Yeah, that's right. Another one of the people we're working with is an old friend and colleague by the name of Henry Capello. He's the founder of an international association of charities like we are, called Caritas in Veritate. I think we're the only American organization as part of it, because it's mostly in other parts of the world, in Africa, Asia, Philippines, China, different places. So he's been there most of last month. And he was back for a week, and he'll be going back in a few days again. But he's been out in the Donbass area, in the eastern area, close to the border of Russia, traveled through Ukraine, and has been mobilizing and obtaining goods to bring directly to those people. So he's been providing food and water and baby formula, blankets, sanitary kits. With the funds that we and others have sent to him, he was able to obtain two ambulances. One of them's going into Lutsk, which is sort of on the western side, and Struga, which is a little more toward the center of Ukraine. And once again, you know, daily text, daily conversations by the phone. It keeps us in touch with what the needs are. He's been in other war zones. He was in Iraq during the war. He was in the part of Iraq toward the end where Islamic State had taken over, had destroyed Christian villages because they were Christians and killed a lot of people. And he said, frankly, this is the worst atrocity I have ever seen. I've been in many war zones, and this is the worst. And I think that word atrocity kind of says it all. But through him and through, you know, he brought us, for example, into contact with an old friend of his who happens to be the pastor of a parish that's 10 miles from in Poland, 10 miles from the border of Ukraine. And Father Adam, you know, told Henry that, you know, all these people are streaming across the border seeking refuge, and they come to the church. They come to our parish. They come to the diocese looking for help. And they've taken people in. They've emptied out their gymnasium in other rooms, and with our assistance and other assistance, they've bought mattresses and blankets and set up places on the floor that people can sleep, and taking people in and providing them with medicine and food and counseling. That's another thing. And then not far from there is the Archdiocese of Przemyśl, which is a Polish archdiocese, and now we're working directly with the archbishop there to provide aid. They've taken in, so far they have 620 refugees living there, and they're placing them in the homes of members of the diocese, are taking them into their homes. They're providing trauma therapy, food, shelter. So we're not as big, you know, as the Red Cross or the UN Refugee Agency, but we can get aid person to person. We can get aid through the church and see it and talk to these people and be getting text and photos and know it's helping people directly. It's a true person to person, brother to brother in Christ aid.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you for doing it, because I mean, we need to do our part. And again, America is a generous nation. There's great organizations that are out there. But I think every effort counts and makes a difference. And you know, your channel distribution is really what has really kind of opened my eyes the most. I mean, there's lots of channels that are already out there, but going into the hands of the bishops, working with the church, being able to get the need that people need is critical. How can people help you? What's the best way to get behind this effort? If they want to learn more about it, support the cause, what's the best way to connect?
Well, go to our website, crosscatholic.org/Ukraine, and that'll take you directly to the area about Ukraine. You can read about, you know, Cardinal Krajewski and see his photo and see him delivering the ambulances. These are the photos he sent us showing what he was doing. You can see, meet Henry and see the people he's meeting with and the kind of aid and the preparation that these churches in Poland are making to help people that we're channeling aid through. So, you know, go to crosscatholic.org/Ukraine, and we're going to try to keep it updated with the latest photos and information we get directly from the people there.
Well, I want to thank you for what you do. Keep us in the loop. Let us know how this all plays out. And, of course, I call everyone to prayer because we certainly need that. The other aspect of this, too, and something you hit on, you know, in addition to hunger and clothes and shelter, and that's all critical stuff, the post-traumatic stress that these individuals have got to go through, women who have lost their husbands, their fathers, their brothers, people whose businesses and homes have been eradicated. I mean, I can't imagine being in America here and having my entire community just eviscerated, you know, it's totally obliterated, and being forced to go to another country and try to start a new life. So your efforts are helping a lot of people bridge what is a very difficult divide, and again, I'm very grateful for your time.
Well, thank you very much, Drew. We're doing the best we can, and we're trying to empower the church that wants to help and is helping, and with our aid, they can do more.
Yeah. Again, the organization's called Cross Catholic Outreach. You can find them at crosscatholic.org. That's crosscatholic.org. I know you've done a lot of stuff in the Caribbean, Haiti, and a lot of other places. I'm grateful for the Ukraine. We'll continue to monitor your efforts. Keep up the good work. Keep us abreast, okay, Jim?
Thank you very much, and God bless you.
God bless you. It's Jim Kavanaugh. Again, Cross Catholic Outreach. Stay with me. When I come back, Congressman Chris Smith is going to join me and bring you up to speed on U.S. sovereignty and how the World Health Organization may be taking over an aspect of that. So we'll get you plugged in. Plus, there is some news that my show team is now working on. I'm going to bring you up to speed on this. In fact, I'll give you a quick peek ahead, if we could. And this is pretty big news. It's just coming across my radar now. Archbishop Cordiglione, the great archbishop there in San Francisco, he happens to be Nancy Pelosi's shepherd. Hey, look, we've talked in the past. Remember this Rose campaign for Nancy Pelosi, how people would promise prayers and rosaries, and for everyone who committed to the campaign, a rose was delivered to Nancy. Now, I've talked about Joe Biden. I've talked about Nancy Pelosi. I've talked about Catholics in public office. And a big question a lot of people have, and they've been very frustrated about it, is like, why is a woman like Nancy Pelosi or a man like Joe Biden who profess their Catholicism? Joe Biden goes to Mass on Sunday, and yet he's doing everything in his power. She's doing everything in her power to make sure that children could be murdered and destroyed in the womb. Huh? That Roe remains the law of the land, and if it isn't, that it somehow gets codified, right? Chuck Schumer wanting to have that vote. It's absolutely horrific, absolutely horrible. And I'll tell you what, a little bit later in the broadcast, maybe after the chapel, we'll pray about it. Archbishop Cordiglione sent a notification to Nancy Pelosi. She is not to receive communion. She is not to present herself for Holy Communion. Today at noon, he released a letter to the faithful explaining why. I'll share with you his reasons coming up in a little bit. So stay with me as we work to give you the most concise and accurate information possible. That and more straight ahead. Stay with us.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com
Forrester.
Why on earth would we give the World Health Organization any more power when they absolutely blew it over the course of this pandemic?
Absolutely no reason whatsoever. The WHO ignored the early warnings when the COVID pandemic was just beginning. They came from Taiwan. They completely ignored that. And then they
believed the Chinese, China,
I think you said, for transparency when the Chinese were imprisoning people like that. And never forget that in 2014, when the Ebola outbreak was happening, the WHO resisted calls from the doctors who knew what they were doing, and they didn't want to offend any of their member governments, apparently. So their track record is absolutely abysmal. And certainly not. Why should we give any more power to, frankly, to China, never mind to Bill Gates?
Why is no one even questioning this? No one's even talking about potentially giving the WHO these unprecedented powers.
Well, you know, supranational governance that power grabs democratic agency from ordinary folk over their ordinary everyday lives, especially their bodily autonomy, is dangerous. And it is not a recipe for peace. You know, I banged this drum during the Brexit years as well because the EU kept power grabbing more and more. Because if you think this is the end of it, it's not. We have to draw a red line now, and Boris needs to be very clear about our negotiating position, because Bill Gates seems to have more of a God complex at the moment than like Bono and Tony Blair put together.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was a clip from Great Britain News yesterday. Their hosts were discussing whether or not the World Health Organization should supersede control over regional or national law. Coming up in a minute, Congressman Chris Smith will join us. And let me just give you the background on this as we dive into this issue. When COVID-19, when the pandemic first hit, right, everybody turned to the World Health Organization. And what did it do? It downplayed the pandemic. And it said, oh, no, China has everything under control, right? It became very clear over the course of time that was not the case, that the World Health Organization, got this wrong. And they finally, you know, called a pandemic well after it had started and was spreading around the world. Remember how Donald Trump, how he was maligned for closing the borders? In the end, it ended up being the right decision. A lot of observers, you know, they turned to the World Health Organization as if that was the gold standard. It was obvious that it wasn't the head of the WHO who was really calling the shots. It was China. It was actually China. But what happened after the WHO finally declared the pandemic? You know, what happened? They started intervening in poorer countries that don't have the same kind of resources like the U.S. and other first world, you know, like other first world countries have as well. But whether or not they actually helped, who knows? That's the question. Bottom line is this. The 109 countries that are members of the World Health Organization, they're going to be voting next week. Now, listen to this. This is really important. They're going to be voting next week on approving amendments to what the World Health what they can treat, what kind of authority they will have. This vote could give the Global Health Organization the authority to call a pandemic whenever they felt the need, and then start giving instructions on what you are to do. In other words, the situation we talked about yesterday with Dr. Tabali, this case of monkeypox that is now manifesting in our country. You know, there's been reports of it. If that was to get out of hand, these amendments would ultimately give the World Health Organization the authority to tell the United States, tell us here in the States, what to do to try to prevent its spread. So instead of your local county or state health authority, which is subject, by the way, to your vote, right? You put them in office telling people how to go about things. Those directions would come from somebody internationally, somebody in Geneva, somebody who is not elected. That means that the U.S., if you think about this, and this is where the danger lies, it would be giving up some of its sovereignty. And I often say, we got to be very careful. You give up an inch here, doesn't seem like much. You give up an inch there, doesn't seem like much. You give up another inch there, before you know it, you're a foot further away, right? It's a very dangerous slope. If I don't like the idea of the U.S. giving up any sovereignty because of how this vote and amendments are structured, this change wouldn't be subject to review by the Senate, which is how most international treaties are dealt with. So Congressman Chris Smith has been vocal on the issue. He's a great champion of life, one of the great representatives from the state of New Jersey. In fact, he hails from their 4th district. He's not very happy with these changes either, and he stops by to tell us why. Congressman, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Good afternoon. Oh, thanks for having me on. And thank you again for you bear truth, you know, bear witness to the truth and speak truth to power every single day. I can't thank you enough. You're such a power.
Well,
and such a force.
Thank you.
And I mean that.
Thank you.
We need more like you.
Yeah, well, I'm humbled by those remarks. Thank you very much. And I know you've been a voice for the defenseless, the Uyghurs. We've talked about China in the past.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tell me what's going on here with the World Health Organization. Why aren't these amendments subject to the review of the Senate like all other treaties? I don't understand why we want to abdicate that authority.
Well, there's a twin track underway, and this is an all-out power grab by the World Health Organization and certain globalists. We've had in effect the international health regulations for years. In 2005, regulations were promulgated that gave like equal power to the states. They had to be consulted. They had to be, you know, and by states, I mean the United States of America or the UK. If there's a health crisis, they are partners, but the WHO cannot dictate terms and conditions to them. This, and I've gone through all of the amendments that Biden is proposing. He only submitted them on April 12th to the World Health Organization. We recently got a copy of them. And when you look at the current language in those health regulations, what he crosses out and excises from the regulations are all of the where the state has that power to say, no, that's not what we want to do in the United States of America. We have a better way of doing this. We're not going to kowtow to what it is that you want. And throughout the entire document, that's what you find. That's what's excised out of this regulation. Now, on a parallel track, there's a major push for a treaty, which would be binding, which would give incredible powers over to the World Health Organization. The European Council, for example, on March 3rd, adopted a decision to begin negotiations on the new pandemic treaty, as they're calling it. And again, we need to fight pandemics. We need to fight infectious diseases. I have spent much of my time fighting against HIV, AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, and all of these terrible diseases. But you can't give unelected bureaucrats who have shown themselves to be incompetent and corrupt such power over our sovereignty. And Tedros, the director general of the World Health Organization, he got his job from the Chinese Communist Party. They sponsored him, pushed him to become the director general. And so when the virus, the pandemic, COVID-19, began, he was Paul parroting exactly what the Chinese Communist Party wanted to say, no human-to-human transmission. And they still have engaged in a cover-up about the origins, which we, with almost absolute certainty now, know it was the laboratory. But they still cling to this myth. So what kind of confidence do you have in Tedros, who used to be, and I've known him for years. I knew him when he was the foreign minister and the health ministry, a minister for Ethiopia. And, he covered up some cholera outbreaks to please his boss, who is Prime Minister Meles of Ethiopia. And now he's doing the same thing for China. He's been doing it. And unfortunately, he's poised next week to get another five-year term. He's unopposed because this administration is all in for Tedros. So
that's crazy.
And there's other problems here, too. I mean, he'll have more power over the purse. Right now, he only has power over what we call the mandatory contributions. It's called the CIST. It's about 20% of the WHO budget. But there's a lot of money that's given for specific outbreaks of this or that, like Ebola, when that was all the concern. He would have control over that as well. I mean, are you kidding me? Who elected this man? You know, a group of people who sit in behind closed doors. There's no transparency whatsoever.
So Congressman Smith, he
gets to pick and to say this is a crisis, whether the country agrees or not, and then this is the response if the country agrees or not. And the country is 48 hours under these new regulations that are being pushed by Biden to just give an accounting as to why they're not accepting WHO's response.
So just so I understand this, so if it passes, what's that mean on the local level for us here in the States? Would our state, our county, our city health officials have to wait to see what the World Health Organization says? You know, when they're
You're right. We, you know, we are less inclined because this is not a treaty, so its enforcement is less egregious than it would be if it was a treaty where you, you know, we have the power of law, international law, and that's what they're pushing for within a year or two, and pushing really hard. And so this was what Biden is doing here, which I find shameful, is a template for what that treaty will look like when it's finally proposed. Now, our Senate might not ratify it, and I certainly hope they don't if all of these horrible things are in it. Again, you can't give up your sovereignty. Better that our doctors know what's going on or on the scene rather than somebody in Geneva saying, this is what you must do or else.
Now, is there a way to stop the U.S. from being part of it? I guess we just don't ratify this. I mean, but based on the administration and the current composition.
Great question.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Great question. The regulations, it is very hard to stop that because they are regulations of the WHO. The power of enforcement is somewhat limited. You know, they put coy on the carpet. They tell you to do this or that. It's unclear what power after this meeting next week that they will have. But a treaty would have, you know, very serious international ramifications. So, again, there's a dual track here. First track is what they're doing next week, and it's anticipation of, and, again, this is would become the template for a treaty that just gets rid of sovereignty.
Wow.
And I think, you know, I read it very carefully. Every place you look, and it, anything where, you know, the country has the power to say something, even an emergency committee that would be created in a crisis. Who gets to pick everybody on the committee? The director general, in this case, Tedros, with such
That's
a checkered
wild.
Record.
Well, first of all, thank you for bringing voice to this particular issue. And I'm just curious. I don't know how aware most of America is regarding this. You have a better sense of this. Has the media been responsive to what's happening? I hope we're getting some airplay on this. One of the reasons I wanted you to be on.
You're doing it, and I deeply appreciate that. Fox has taken it up, but only recently. You know, they hit the ball very effectively for months on this. It wasn't actually, you know, received by the WHO until April 12th. So they weren't saying, here's what we're thinking of doing, you know, with a sense of transparency. What do you think? This is what we're doing. And, you know, just take it or leave it. And leaving it's very hard. So I think there's a need, but the Democrats control House and Senate, for very serious hearings. You know, any regulation that is written could be undone the next year because the World Health Organization meets every year. And we got to make sure that this neglect of sovereignty, of the United States, I mean, we have the finest healthcare professionals in the world. And we're going to say, oh, WHO tells us we got it all wrong, especially given their track record with the pandemic. The pandemic was worse because Tedros, WHO Director General, just said whatever the Chinese Communist Party wanted him to say. And the culture of denial or whatever, lack of accountability continues. I offered an amendment in the Foreign Affairs Committee several months ago that said, okay, we can't get the WHO to tell us how this all came to be. Was it a weapons thing? Was it a leak of some kind? Was it a chain of function? You know, all those things. So I offered an amendment saying we need to empower Americans to be able to sue the Chinese government. And we did it with Saudi Arabia after 9/11 to waive what we call the foreign immunities provisions to go after a country. And more than anything else, I don't know if we would ever get compensation for all the victims, but more than anything else on the short term, to get discovery, to find out, you know, in a U.S. federal court or courts, exactly what happened and what the origin of this is, because it's been nothing but obstruction and lack of transparency. And who's been the worst? WHO.
Wow, unbelievable. Again, Congressman, I'm grateful for your voice and all that you're doing. And you're a good Catholic, too, and I want to thank you for being that way. I don't know if you heard this news. It's a little bit divergent from what we're talking about, but I just heard that His Excellency yeah. Archbishop Cordiglione, the Archbishop of San Francisco, who's Nancy Pelosi's shepherd out there, has just made a statement that you know, she's not to present herself for Holy Communion, which I personally think is a bold and I think it's a good decision yeah. on his point. But, you know, being in Congress and seeing what's looming now for the fight for life in this country, we see what's happening with the courts. We see the Dobbs case coming up. I love your take on where we are right now and oh, sure. how you see the fight for life.
Well, I think, you know, I've been in the movement since 1972. My wife, I met her in the movement in 1974. So we've both been in for me for 50 years. And we always hoped and prayed and even fasted and worked towards reversing Roe versus Wade. And I think we are on the verge, God willing, of doing so. But that just means that the constitutional right to abortion disappears because it was created out of thin air. Justice Byron White, you recall, said it was an exercise in royal judicial power. They just created it. And they used very, very bad historical precedent to do so. They got it wrong about what the laws were all about in the United States previous. So it was a horrible decision. 63.5 million dead babies later, the equivalent of every man, woman, and child yeah. living in Italy. And so the loss of life. And so I'm optimistic, but I think everyone has to be realistic that the other side will go for abortion till birth. My state, under Governor Murphy, he pushed yep. through a bill backed by Democrats that allows abortion right to the moment of birth, same way with New York, same way with Colorado, same way with wow. Connecticut and other states. So there's a, you know, how dare they say, I mean, right. to kill a child with dismemberment or chemical poisoning at any stage is horrible, but here you have a kid or a child who feels pain, and you know they're close to being born, and they can be killed. So it's anti-child in the extreme, and that's what they're pushing yeah. for. And I think everybody listening who cares about the unborn, we need to be sure to point out where the Democratic Party is taking this country. When I got elected in 1980, there were about 80 pro-life Democrats. Now there's zero. There's not one in the House.
Wow.
And even people right. like it's Senator so Casey, who used to be pro-life in Pennsylvania, has completely and utterly capitulated and bowed to pressure, as have so many others who used to be with us on the life issue and, you know, on the Democrat side. It's a tragedy beyond words, a great tragedy. You know,
certainly
what
is.
Good are well, any of these jobs if you're killing babies in right. your mind to continue getting reelected?
Yeah, I think of Congressman Lipinski and how his own party, you know, ran
yeah,
against
yeah.
him. Unbelievable. Congressman, I got to leave it right there. Thank you for making time for us.
Hey,
you're
thank
welcome
you.
Here anytime.
Be optimistic, and we will fight hard. You know, the movement is so energized, and we need to move forward with prayer and hard work, and we can win this.
You got it. Amen. I love that.
Thank you.
Love that message and the attitude. Say a prayer for Congressman Smith. The chaplain's coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll remember him and his great mission that God has given him. I'll fill you in on the latest with Archbishop Cordiglione and his letter to the faithful regarding Nancy Pelosi. So stay with me. Our conversation continues right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. Thanks so much for joining me. Boy, I love talk radio. I love live radio. In the middle of my first hour today, my first segment, we got news that His Excellency Archbishop Cordiglione sent a notification to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, that she was not to receive Holy Communion. And I'll tell you what, I don't rejoice in that, but there's part of me that does. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I just want Nancy and Joe and all these other people who are so publicly dissenting, who are committing really a sacrilege in some respects. You know, they're advancing legislation. They're using the power of their influence and their platform to lead people in the scandal. There's a lot of people get confused. They see these people's prominent Catholics. They think, okay, it's okay to have an abortion. It's okay to use contraception. It's okay to do these things. At the same time, they're also wounding women and destroying lives. And for our bishops, which they take so many slings and arrows, don't they? For Bishop Cordiglione to say, hey, enough's enough, Nancy. Enough's enough. Don't receive communion. That's a pretty big chastisement. We'll talk more about it at the bottom of the hour. My team's reached out to His Excellency, and if we don't speak to him today, we'll certainly speak to him Monday. I'm going to play some audio for you coming up at the bottom of the hour so you'll be up to speed. And we'll take a look at what the church teaches about worthily receiving communion. It's not just Joe Biden. It's not just Nancy Pelosi. It's Drew Mariani, right? It's you and it's me. It's all of us. We have to make sure when we receive Jesus, we understand what we're receiving, and we have to do so worthily. Here's what Archbishop Cordiglione said to her. He says, after numerous attempts to speak with her, to help her understand the grave evil she's perpetrating, the scandal she's causing, and the danger to her own soul. I mean, the danger to her own soul she's risking. That's another great point, one I did not articulate. We don't know the day or the hour God's going to call us home. My heart could stop beating after today's show. It could stop right now. Yours could, too. We don't know. You know, and eternity is a long time. I mean, it's forever. You know, Nancy's an intelligent woman. So is Joe Biden. So are a lot of these people who publicly dissent. Their soul is at risk. A lot of us have this mentality in life, don't we? That, I'm gonna die in my sleep, very old in life, or I'm gonna live to be 90, or I'm gonna live to be 100. I mean, you never think that today's the day. You're healthy. You're fine. Life goes on. You're making your plans. I know many people who got onto a plane thinking that they were going to touch down for that business meeting or go home to their spouse, and that plane went down. Or they were driving home, and that car got into an accident. Or in the case of my producer, Tom, whose daughter, within 3 weeks, was dead from an aggressive cancer. I mean, you don't know what life has in store. This life is short, man. It's a heartbeat. It's a blink. And we have to live for God, and we have to live our life accordingly. You know, so His Excellency saying, hey, her soul is really, that's the most important. But she is creating scandal, and she is perpetrating a grave evil. So he says, I've determined the point has come in which I must make a public declaration that she be not admitted to Holy Communion unless and until she publicly repudiates her support of abortion rights. Snap! I mean, that's pretty big. Publicly repudiates that. And confess and receives absolution for her cooperation in this evil in the sacrament of penance. I've accordingly sent her a notification to this effect, which I have now made public. See, a lot goes on behind the scenes, just to His Excellency. He doesn't want to do this. He doesn't want to air out anybody's dirty laundry. The church is always charitable. He's doing this out of love for her, and out of love for so many individuals who would be confused and led astray as a result of this, right? We're going to pray the chaplet coming up. When the chaplet's done, let's talk about this, okay? I really want to dive into this. I want to talk about what the church teaches regarding worthily communion, what St. Faustina had to say about it, what the saints had seen. And the other thing to keep in mind, and he calls her to confession. This is such an important point, too. You and I are called to the same thing. I don't know when the last time you went to confession, whether it was last week, last month or last year or maybe many years ago. It is a sacrament of mercy, and God wants to meet you there. He told Faustine he's only hidden by the priest in that sacrament. You meet Jesus Christ. You want to meet Christ, he's in that sacrament. Because God's love, right? He is absolute love. He's the author of space and time. But you are so important to him. He loves you more than anything. You know, when you get lost, when you get caught in that storm of sin, God's looking down and he's saying to you, you know, I love you. Don't. He's not saying, you know, go ahead, destroy yourself. You deserve it. You chose this path. You made those decisions. You rejected me. Live with me. No, that's not what the Lord says. The Lord says, take everything. Take my life. I'll be waiting for you in confession. You know, I'll be your food in the Eucharist. I want you, my daughter, to come home. I want you, my son, to be made whole. Now, that's the beauty of God. It's a mystery. No mind, be it human or angelic, will ever be able to fathom the depths of God's mercy. We'll never be able to do it, not through all eternity. Somehow, you know, on the scales of the Father's love, you outweigh everything. He told St. Faustina, the greater the sinner, the greater the right that you have to his mercy. Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, the worst abortionist in the world, Hitler, it doesn't matter. On the scales of God's love, you, those individuals, weigh more than anything. God has created everything, but he's marked you with his divine mark. You know, you might think it's hard to love, you know, the people like Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi or somebody who you think is really doing something egregious and sinful. We're called to love them all the more, and I want to pray for them now. And I want to pray for Bishop Cordiglione, so many of these heroic bishops who are concerned about their souls and their eternity and know that God's love and mercy is there for them, and all they do is turn to him. So let's pray, all right? Let's pray. If you have not been to confession, meet our Lord in that sacrament. Doesn't matter what you have done, God's mercy and his love is there for you, even though I know intellectually sometimes it's hard to receive. All right. We'll pray when I come back. Stay with me.